Hello, welcome to Rebite number 12 with me, Tim Elliott, and a very special guest today, Sonny Bunnell, author of the Rare Breed book. Now, if you've not heard of this book, it's one of the favourite books I've read in the last few years, and it's going to be one of those that I stick on my reread list for when I need a kick up the arse, which I invariably do every so often. So, please... I thought you might like that. It did give me a kick up the arse. Why don't you introduce yourself, Sonny, and tell people who you are, what you do?
Well, thank you for that brilliant introduction and for the kind words about Rare Breed. So I am the co-founder and CEO of Motto, which is a brand and leadership consultancy. We work with some of the coolest brands on earth to help visionary leaders wrestle their vision forward. And I am also, as you mentioned, the co-author of Rare Breed, A Guide to Success for the Defiant, Dangerous, and Different, which is a book that explores seven unconventional vices that society has told us are counterintuitive to our success. And in the book, we have reframed them as virtues or real superpowers that can be tapped into and leveraged to not only break through diversity barriers, inclusion barriers, but also to help teams and organizations who employ rare breed talent, who typically and traditionally push them out of organizations. We're trying to help them understand that they are really, truly the gift that they need and their competitive edge. So the book has taken on a real interesting journey where we're having a seat at the table to help people really think with the rare breed mindset and also how to employ rare breed talent.
Yeah, that's really good, actually. I was just remembering watching your YouTube channel. You've got some great interviews on as well, and reading through the book and relating it to kind of the work that I do with leaders and organizations who are not stuck, right? They're good businesses, right? And they're all right. They're kind of middle of the road, they're performing well as you'd see it on a spreadsheet, but they're missing that X factor, right? That thing that makes them amazing, the thing that makes them not just a good brand to buy from, but a good brand to buy into, like that extra depth. And I think it's this sort of thing, the rare breed kind of mentality that then can be manifested in their actions as a brand that will stand them out in this noisy world, right? The world's noisy. We need, we're at a time where we need different, I think.
Yeah. We saw an overwhelming, in our work at Motto specifically, so we've been in the brand space now for 15 years. And we have been in an overwhelmingly amount of companies and organizations and work with leaders of all shapes and sizes and mentalities and ethos and purpose, et cetera. And one thing that we noticed walking the halls with many of these organizations, now virtually, but back then, obviously working directly with them, we saw that there was a real lack of acceptance for people with crazy ideas. And we wanted the rebel at the table. We wanted audacious thinking at the table, but we didn't know what to do with it when it was there, because a lot of times we recognize that humans are quite messy. And so many people who come into organizations, who work at organizations, often chunk a good chunk of the door. We don't really allow people to fully show up as all of who they are, not just the pretty parts. And we wanted to respond with Rare Breed because we felt like there's a real need for acceptance of the rebellious, the audacious, the obsessed, the weird, the hypnotic and emotional, seven traits that we talk about in our book. We felt that it was really necessary to shine a light on not only what it means to have this kind of thinking in your organization, but also if you are a person who's walking around with one of these seven traits, how do you navigate a world that doesn't understand you?
Yeah.
And that's what Rare Breed does. It gives you kind of it tears up the rule book on the way business should be run and the way that you should think about your own career. Because keep in mind, from a very young age, as individuals, we're kind of conditioned into thinking that these things are negative attributes. These are traits to be silenced. And what I have seen time and time again, not only in my own career with Ashley, as starting out with $250 in a town that told us we would fail, with everyone not really supporting us, to be a champion of that and to really celebrate the rare breed, the unordinary among the kind, and to not only help teams and organizations seek them out and truly celebrate them. It's been a real gift, gone far beyond the branding conversation to something much, much deeper.
That's it. I think you hit upon a question I had down for you actually in that last speech. You put a question in the introduction of the book, can I be a rare breed? Right. And I think you illuminated on it because are rare breeds, this is a daft question maybe, but are our breeds rare by their nature, by the very naming of it? Or has everybody kind of got that ability within them, but then it's taught out of us or organizations and things crush it out of us, a little bit like creativity. So we're the most creative when we're, I think, maybe 5 or 8 at school, and then it gets systematically organized into a different part of our brain for many of us. Well, what's your think on that? Can everybody be a rare breed?
So I think they're rare because they're rare,
right?
Right. Yeah. They're by definition, as I said, unordinary among the kind. I think the difference between rare breeds and everyone else is while everyone else is suppressing these inherent traits, rare breeds really lean into them. They're really celebrating them. They're letting them off the leash to vandalize tradition. I believe that we have inherent characteristics that we are born with. And I have seen or believe that throughout time, through friends, mentors, our own parents, teachers, life, we are conditioned to grind down those prickly points. And what I have seen is that many people either become silenced or awakened at different points in their life. And I think a lot of people just stay silent forever. They're in a job that they don't love. They're doing work that does not fulfill them. They are dreaming of a different path that they don't have the courage or the conviction to take. I think that's the difference between a rare breed and someone is not, is the rare breed has finally kind of had this character development where they've realized that these tools, these traits that they have, these counterintuitive traits are actually keys to their success. And if there's a door in front of them, one of those traits is going to kick it down. So if they are rebellious, if they are audacious, if they are obsessed, if they're weird, if they're emotional, you know, we're taught that these are traits we should force into, try to quiet those down. And if we can unleash that within ourselves and we can activate it, I believe that is when you really truly become a standout. It's the difference between those that are and those that are not. Can everyone be a rare breed? No, I don't think so. But I think you have things within you that you obviously can be leaning into that you're more than likely not. You know, life tells us that you're probably not tapping totally into your full potential. We're always dissatisfied, you know, especially if you're an overachiever. I think we're often dissatisfied with where we are. And that's why we keep reaching beyond the grass, because there's something about whatever it is that we're chasing that we've yet to attain.
Yeah. I think, so a couple of things came to mind as you were saying that. I'm ignoring all of the questions I prepared now, just so you know. We've already
just going down the path.
We've already lost it. But anyway.
That's okay.
But
you can bring it back around.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later.
All right, cool.
But there's for the last kind of couple of years, there's been an underlying theme to a lot of, I don't know, a lot of the talks I've seen, a lot of industry events. So for people who don't know who I am out there in pod world, you would label me a marketer if you'd have to label me anything. So I go to a lot of events. There's a big one here in London called the Festival of Marketing. It's like the pinnacle of marketing stuff in the UK. And I went there in 2019, not 2020, obviously. But that was a 3-day event. And I think every talk I went to, like the motto, no pun intended,
I saw what you did there.
but the underlying message, right? The thing that was got over in each of the talks, no matter what the title of the talk was there's a lack of bravery, right? A lack of bravery in our industry as marketers and creatives that are meant to be the most bloody brave, right? In theory, right? But not only that, in the market, in the category, yeah. in industry, right? Business has become lazy. We've had some amazing years recently, and there's an app for everything, right? To be effective is kind of, well, to be efficient is kind of easy, right? It's expected to be efficient, to be good at your job.
But yeah, that's the baseline for entry, you know, that you, if you're in any industry, especially in the branding industry, the bar is just that you should be all these things anyway. It's the barrier to entry. You know, it's the price you pay to play in the game, but to be rare and to be remarkable is really difficult. It's so hard to be extraordinary.
But for like I do a workshop. One of the workshops I do is called Brave Creative Leadership. And I work a lot in non-creative industries. So manufacturing, engineering, professional services, so lawyers, accountants, that sort of thing, which are generally inhabited, generally sweeping generalization, by middle-aged gentlemen in gray suits, white shirts and red ties, God bless them.
Sounds like who I was up against when we started in our early 20s.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think there's like it's trying to teach them the concept of, I don't know, changing their mindset is a battle, right? And that's why I love Rare Breed, because it even though I've done that through kind of creativity rather than virtues, rather than individual people, like personality skills and virtues that Rare Breed show, I too have been in that situation of people who doubt that this is an important thing nowadays, right? And for those of us who can see the light, right, who can see the end of the tunnel,
yeah,
like there's, we're going, but you're going to fail. You think it's all right now, but your viewpoint is, I don't know, 3 months away. You're thinking 90-day cycles. This thing, getting Rare Breed people in your teams will future-proof you. You need Rare Breed people. You need
them at the table. Mm-hmm. 100%.
This is it, right? You need them at the table, because the future of work is going to be, thanks to technology, all about the human skills being amplified to be the most human, right? And the seven in your book are put beautifully, right? That, like, who would have said 10 years ago that they need a really emotional person at the boardroom table?
Well, that's what's interesting about the seven virtues that we outline. And when we were coming to clarity on what those seven should be, was that they had to have a dark side. In other words, they had to be as uplifting as they were undoing. They had to be as empowering as they were destructive. And it was important that we explore that murky borderland between light and dark in the vices and the virtues. And that's why when you read the book in depth, it doesn't just talk about, you know, being rebellious for the sake of being rebellious, but it talks about why emotion is allows you to be this intuitive empath that is able to live on a different frequency than everyone else around you, and why that is such a superpower to have. And yet a lot of times when we think of someone that we're describing as too emotional, we're like, oh, they're just so emotional. And you say it in such a negative way because you don't want that emotion to go awry, because you feel like emotion means instability. And sometimes it does. But in the book, we talk about why that truly is something that you want within your organization. And it's why we're being invited now to speak. We're getting ready to do a leadership workshop with close to 40 executive leaderships of one of the top three brands in the world. And we're going to sit at the table with these individuals, and, you know, virtual table right now, but we're going to be sitting with them and talking to them about why, what is a rare breed? Why are rare breeds necessary? How can they think with a rare breed mindset? Why do they need rare breed talent at the table? Because traditionally these organizations thrive on structure, but in that structure, we push out anything that doesn't look like us. We tend to look at those individuals and we're like, we suppress them, or we push them out, or we don't really know how to tap into to who they are. And because we don't know and have the tools and the necessary skill set to be able to do that, our natural instinct is to go, you go to a different team, you know, or you go to a different part of the company, or you just leave. And then these individuals find a frustration because they're like, you know what, I don't belong here. And so then they go off and do their own thing to much brilliance. And it was because no one knew how to actually tap into that and leverage it in the right ways. Yeah. And it's a fascinating conversation, because now we're talking about diversity and inclusion. We're talking about, you know, it's the book has really opened us up to some powerful conversations that, you know, when we wrote it, not that we weren't thinking about it, but we had no idea that it would resonate on this kind of level. And you know, I was just interviewed by someone a few weeks ago who asked the question on the call. The first question he asked me was, I have a rare breed daughter. What's your advice? And I was like, wow, what an interesting
thing. Yeah.
Thing, you know, and I'm like, wow, this is like a parental thing now, that parents are buying this book for their kids, and also that they're recognizing that as parents, we often, if we have these traits, and these traits are showing up at a very young age, by the way, you know, these traits of even me as a young child, I was quite a handful, and my parents didn't know what to do with me. They were just like trying to get me into gifted and talented programs, and then they were trying to get me therapy, and because they didn't understand the way I worked and what I needed, and they celebrated me, but they still didn't have the tools to know that I was different, and the way that they would need to parent me was very different than the way that they had parented the others. And I think that is something that a lot of parents don't understand. And I think the CEOs of our own companies don't understand. And if I can affect any of that conversation in a positive way, then we've done a good job.
Yeah. And it's, I think the book itself can be one of those books that are rare. God, all the puns today, right?
just say it.
Right. God, sorry, it's late in the day.
It's hard. There's no language for this, right? But there's no conversation. There's no language for this.
There's no language, right? It's one of those things that I can read. When did I first read it? I don't know, maybe 2-3 months ago.
Mm.
And I reread it again last week, as you know, as we were arranging this conversation. And it's probably one of those, I have a reread shelf, right, with, I don't know, out of my 23 years in business, 9 books, 10 books on, that I go, I need to reread these.
Oh man, thank you.
That every echelon of my life, you know, when stuff changes, you go, okay, hold on, I've got a slightly different worldview now. Yep. I wonder what this book means to me now.
Mm, like, such an interesting idea. Way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think you've hit on that stream of thinking at the right time.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of people who aren't like me, who aren't on all the personality tests, top left and yellow. Like,
like we have a rare breed quiz, by the way, which I think is very cool. Have you taken that?
I have taken that. Yeah.
What did you get?
I'm weird.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I've only talked to you a little bit, but in our earlier conversation, I was like, he's got a little bit of that. I can see it. I love it though. It's such a powerful way of, it's such a powerful thinker in my experience.
It is, right. But I've read the whole book despite, like, because I did the test after I read the book, obviously. But like there's aspects within each of the seven virtues that this is turning into a Tim therapy session a little bit. But
come on.
that kind of go, oh, hold on a second. I'm a little bit one of these as well. Like in times, I can be one of those. But I think it's getting enough resonance in your mind, getting that something to click, right? Whether it's the quiz result, whether it's your description of what kind of rebellious is or audacious. Mm-hmm. There's a great, I can't remember the chap's name. There's a great interview on the YouTube channel of the audacious guy.
Charlemagne,
that was him. Yeah,
Charlemagne the God. Yeah,
I'd not come across Charlemagne in my tiny corner of Britain.
Oh wow, you should listen to him. He's something. He's the host of the Breakfast Club, but he's also recently been chatting quite a bit. This morning they just had Obama on the Breakfast Club. He was interviewing, and also he's a contributor to Black culture, and just his thinking is extraordinary. And meeting him reaffirmed what I had suspected about him, was that he had been using audacity in the early part of his career. It was backfiring and he didn't know how to harness it. And then in the interview that we had with him on YouTube, just for context for people that are listening, we interviewed Charlemagne the God, who's host and of the Breakfast Club. And he's also a best-selling author of a book called Black Privilege. And then I think the next book that he wrote was called Shook One, which was about mental health and kind of coming to terms with the fact that he had struggled with mental health. And he's just a really inspiring figure. But he had had quite a bit of backlash before we had interviewed him. And in the interview, which I think was extremely pivotal, and the reason that he came on the show was we had given him a floor to talk about how audacity had not only given him quite a few black eyes, got him fired from Wendy Williams, got him fired from many jobs, and just had created a ruckus. He's been accused of all sorts of things. But in that interview, what I saw was somebody who had was transforming the use of audacity to understand the power of not only his audacity, but the power of his words. And it was just an extraordinary interview. If anybody's listening, it would be great for you to watch, but it's such a fascinating conversation because it was kind of a look inside someone who had been the dark side of the trait and had turned it into really an unstoppable career. I mean, he's been on CNN recently. He's been talking about, you know, diversity. He's been talking about, you know, race and Black Lives Matter. And he's just a phenomenal voice that's using that voice now for good.
I think, yeah, I mean, like just as a separate recommendation and big up, the four or five interviews, the seasons on the YouTube channel, they're all got Dodie, the young British singer for people, is like amazing. What an open interview that was.
And oh, so cool. So cool. She was beyond her years, and a fascinating study, a masterclass in obsession, but also in the mental health of obsession and the sometimes the price you pay by being obsessed, and why that can lead you to do some of your greatest work, but it can also challenge you in ways you never thought imaginable.
Like it was such a, like you said, beyond her years, like such wisdom and openness about a subject that is still like a little taboo for many I know it's coming out, but she was so honest and like just taking me back. And another gentleman on there, John Batiste,
yeah, from the Late Show.
Another guy I discovered through your YouTube channel and not come across. What a guy he is! I've got a little man crush on John Batiste.
Is he not just like the most hypnotic individual that you could imagine? I mean, when we were at the table with him, you know, he'd come to us as a recommendation. They're like, you know, you want to just to talk about the YouTube series. So the YouTube series is really a masterclass of exposing the vices at work in the people that we interview. So we're sitting down with cultural provocateurs to understand and unpack one of the vice in their life and work and career and how they've, you know, taken a couple black eyes from it, but also it had been kind of the thing that had probably led them to success. And we had come across John Batiste, who's the band leader of the Stephen Colbert Late Show. He's also in the new movie Soul, the Disney movie Soul. Or it might be Pixar. I'm not sure, Disney or Pixar, but anyway, I think they're the same. But he's part of that, and he's just a phenomenal individual. But at the table, he is so charismatic, and so he just oozes this charisma that even when I was in the interview, I was like losing my train of thought because I was like, he is like a master study of someone who is hypnotic and who knows he's doing it. And I was just fascinated with him. I think he's just a brilliant individual, but the fact that he kind of culminated what we were talking about in real life was exciting because we were trying to prove the thesis that these individuals exist and this is what they're doing and this is how they operate and move through the world. And what can we learn from them? Not about how you became successful, but how have you leaned into all of the things that you've been taught your whole life you shouldn't be. And it was just fascinating to me to interview him and to spend that kind of time with all those individuals. Because you just learn so much. You learn that what you were writing about 2 years prior is sort of you're exposing someone who is the epitome of what you were writing about.
It's another proof point that you're right. So like I said, I watched read the book before I watched the videos, and like I could listen to John Batiste read the dictionary. Oh my god, like ridiculous.
I know. Trust me. Imagine being at the table with him, like this far apart. Like, I was just like, this is crazy.
But you were like, oh right, so that's what hypnotic was.
I was like, that's what hypnotic's all about. Yeah, this is real. Yeah, it was really cool.
After
really cool.
Stopped replaying it for the fourth. Like, you go, oh, right, that's it. I get it.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting about that too, so Ashley and I are the EPs of that show as well. We're the EPs, the producers, the hosts and the stars of the show. But I also, me specifically, spend a tremendous amount of time editing. And so a lot of what you see on the YouTube channel is my hands on a good bit of that storytelling. And I remember watching his video. And the interviews are like 45 minutes to an hour long, but we cut them down. And I remember thinking, oh, I just want to release like the extended cut of this because it's so, he's so engaging and so thorough in his sort of dissection of what these traits are. And I should do that now that I'm thinking about it. Maybe I should release the extended cuts because they're so cool. Yeah. I've had a few people reach out to us and ask us like if we had the extended version of that. They were like, was there more than 25 minutes? And I was like, yeah, there was like an hour and a half. But we didn't know if people at the time, we didn't know if people would watch it. And then we had such a huge receive to it that it made me wonder if we should be pushing out more of the longer extended cuts because there's just fascinating conversations that I know are not what you typically discuss or talk about.
Yeah. You definitely should. I would watch that as a Netflix box series.
Cool.
Like do that. But to take a step back to what we were talking about when we discussed Charlemagne, right?
Yep. And
I think like this stuff that's been happening globally, this COVID stuff throughout the year, right? Whatever the people's journey of, right? That what There is something in the air, right? There's change in the air. It feels like the right time to do something different, to change, right? It's a great time of kind of unlearning, I think, right? And I think it's time for us to unlearn, as many, to unlearn what we think work is, like what we think creativity or marketing specifically is, what we think being professional is, right? What we think, maybe what we think good is, what our purview of being a good business, being good at work, right? Being good at what success is, unlearning all this stuff, right? I think that's happening, whether we like it's in, it feels like it's in the air. I can kind of taste it. And I know I'm weird, right? We've discussed that already, so it's fine. I don't expect everybody to know what I'm on about, but I think it's the right time for the rare breed virtues, right? Because it's, even for me, who's into it, right? I'm on board the train when I read the cover, right? I got on board. It was fine. I was already away. But there's like, it's time for people to understand these virtues, because they do, like I said in the intro, give you a bit of a kick, right? They're one of those things that you go, oh, actually, that was, geez. Like when I did the test and found out I was weird, I was like, weird? I'm not, hold on. No, I am. I am a bit weird. I'll ask my wife, wait a second. And she was like, you were definitely weird. I was like, right.
I love it. Yeah. Well, you know, our partners always know, right? Like they know who we really are. So yeah, she probably sees it. I mean, you know, you're probably a myriad of all those things, right? So when we were doing the first iteration of the Rare Breed quiz, where, as you were speaking about, it's a list of 25 questions. We worked with a psychologist and a professor to study and create a quiz that could not be guessed easily. In other words, you really have to think about the questions and the answers you're about to give. And at the end of it, it tells you which of the dominant trait that you possess. And in the first iteration, we had like two. We had a primary and a secondary trait, because in the beginning, when Ashley and I were taking it, Ashley is my co-partner and co-author at Motto and also for Rare Breed. But when we both were taking it, I got audacious and obsessed. And I was like, and anybody who knows me knows that that's absolutely true. And so it was, and she's also audacious and emotional. She's probably a little bit more emotional than she is audacious, but we're very much in tune with the quiz. And what we learned was that there is usually, even if you possess a little bit of each one of the seven, there's always one that's really a dominant force in your life. And when you know what it is, it allows you to really lean into it and celebrate it and bring it to the forefront of what you're doing, because then you can kind of like look to it in order to understand how to navigate through the world. It gives you kind of a lens to look at your work and your life and your choices to know whether you're on brand for yourself or not. And I think that's extremely valuable for a lot of people who don't know themselves very well. This gives you a lens, a tool to look through to not only help you steer the decisions that you make in your own career, but certainly in the choices that you make for your own life. So it's a fascinating tool for people to use. But you had said something about that the world is really changing, and you feel something in the air that COVID has sort of pushed people to pivot and think differently. And I think it goes back to chapter one of our book, which is fuck norms. Like, scratch everything that's been, you know, because the future is never going to be the same. I believe that business as usual is over. I think rare breeds are going to emerge as the most necessary people on the planet, because we're going to question everything. We're going to enjoy the impossible. We're going to think around corners. We're going to pivot after failure, and we're going to hold nothing sacred. Rare breeds have little tolerance for systems and ideas that don't work or that have been business as usual. In other words, they're already adapting. They've been adapting. They were adapting back in March, you know, while everyone else is trying to fit the old model into a new model, into a new world, rare breeds have already figured out the new enemy, the new cause that they're fighting against. And so you said it beautifully. I think this is the future. Rare breeds are the future.
It feels like a tool, a bit like archetypes, like brand archetypes, you know, the young.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's some overlap there for sure. I mean, when we were thinking about it, they are archetypal in nature, but
a different, maybe on a slightly different spectrum, like on a, if you want to get people to identify with a personality of the mm-hmm. brand for this new thing that they're trying to learn, right? This thing that's going to kick them forward a bunch, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like archetypes are good, and they're the thing that a bunch of history, and it's kind of academic. And you can go super deep into it,
but they're so over abused in the branding space. You know, I'm getting tired of hearing about it, to be honest. You know, so it's like I'm in the branding world, and I was getting tired of it. I was like, if one more person reaches out to me and tells me that they're a little bit jester and 20%, you know, every man and 3% rebellious, I was going to be like, no. It's so confusing. You know, people are not utilizing it correctly. So what I love about Rare Breed is that I think it forces you to focus what lens can you look through? So I love that some companies have asked us to apply it to their strategic thinking. In other words, we've been asked to have to come into companies and say, where do you fit on in this seven wheel? You know, where does your organization sit, and how can we use that as a true differentiator? You know, the thing that makes you the one of a kind in your category, while everyone else is trying to be something they're not. How do you become all of who you are and really showcase that on the highest level? And it's exciting to be a part of those conversations, because it opens their thinking up to things that they've not traditionally been taught or that they even know about. Everybody knows about archetyping, but if you come into the conversation talking about rare breed in a new, exciting way, it's like they're hearing it for the first time. And it helps to put things into context in a way that gives you a competitive edge in ways that others won't have.
Yeah, I agree totally with that. And I've circled the notes, a word in my notebook, which is they're a challenge, right? Where mm-hmm. archetypes go, oh, cool, we're an archetype.
Yeah.
Bit here. Oh, cool.
We're the everyman.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Like you just, it's kind of accepted. They're not super challenging. Whereas mm-hmm. if you're rebellious, if you're hot blooded, right? If you're emotional, you're like,
oh, yeah.
Like you have to really think about it, right? To be,
yeah.
To be on board and manifest that mm-hmm. in then your work and your organization and the actions you put out and the stories you tell in the world, right? You've got to be properly on board. And that's
you have to go all in. Yeah. Because, right? Because it shows up in everything that you do or say. And many of these they don't know how to double down on these things in a way that really forces them to get extremely clear. You know, that is what Motto does. Like, we go into leadership teams and organizations to help them get clear. We solve extremely complex problems at the brand and operational level, at the leadership level, at the mindset level. It's never a branding problem. Rarely is it a branding problem. It's usually a leadership problem. And so it starts there, and then it sort of trickles down into the rest of the organization. So if you're confused at the top, you're confused at the bottom and everywhere in between. And the middle is a really dangerous place, because you can have an uprising there where people are trying to like push change up through the top, and someone at the top just doesn't accept it because they're not thinking with a rare breed mindset. So trying to get everyone to that pyramid is extremely important. And if you can get them to really commit and have the bravery and the courage, as you said so beautifully earlier, real change can happen. And in a transformational way, I've seen it work time and time again with company after company. And, you know, Rare Breed is just, it's a mirror. It's revealing you back to you so that you actually know what to do with it. And that's the power in this ethos.
Yeah, I think that you remind me actually of another podcast interview that we had with a guy called Michael Owen. So Michael Owen is a British guy from the northeast of England, Newcastle, and he's ex-agency guy. He's ran and sold a few agencies and a brand guy. He's like super smart. He's got a really good blog called 50 Odd. He's writing he's writing a post a day for his 50s. He's 52 now, I think.
Oh wow.
But he's very good. He's very opinion. He's got opinions, right? He's been around the block. He's
confident. Yeah.
He's one of us, right? And he in his interview he said, I think we were talking about building a sustainable brand, but obviously, like this podcast, it's gone off somewhere else.
All right. I think it's a good conversation, don't you?
Yeah. We covered sustainable brand building in about the first 5 minutes, and then it went out somewhere else. But
I already just hit you with it.
But he mentioned words, right? Kill a lot of effective leaders and brands and businesses, and that was comparison and judgment, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
those two words have stuck in my head. Like every day I've gone, I wonder. Like he says, they're the two filters that you have to run through life, mm-hmm. but ignore, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You have to ignore them, because if mm-hmm. you compare yourself to other people, it's going to stop. If you subject yourself to self-judgment or judgment of others, it's going to stop.
I think that is really interesting is the... what I think rare breeds don't do is kind of like look over their shoulder. They're ignoring the rival. There is no rival. Their rival is themselves. Their biggest obstacle is themselves. Their enemy is themselves. Other than that, they're unstoppable. And I think that many companies get in the way of themselves because they overthink it. They overthink what they study what the competitor's doing. They try to understand the competitive landscape. They try to understand how can they have the best product, the best service, you know, And you know, they waste an extraordinary amount of time trying to pay attention to someone else when what they should be trying to do is be the best version of themselves and fully bring that to light. And that's what you get. You get it. What he's getting at is, you have to remove judgment of not only what other people are doing, but you have to ignore the competition. You have to ignore your rivals, because you're just going to drown in a sea of sameness. You're never, what is that game that you're playing? And why is it that you want to beat your competitor? There's plenty of work to go around. It isn't about that. I think it's so much deeper than that.
Yeah. And I think like just harping back to what we've spoken about before, there's, like it feels like the right time or this change that we've been enforced, right? So people haven't chosen this bunch of change, but there's a bunch of change in the air has expedited maybe at least our openness to different definitions of things, mm-hmm. of different works. And I for one will be advocating rare breed to a few of our clients that need, you know, have the opportunity at their fingertips, but are at that kind of chasm, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of chasm where if they were to, like in the human centered design work I do, right, we're obviously very open to cross functional teams, like having people from different departments work on growth, for example, mm-hmm. not just the marketing people, not just the sales people,
right?
Like breaking down the silos. But mm-hmm. I think if there was, you know, if the future of organizations were all cross-functional teams, A, it would be beautiful. But if at least they had a rare breed in each one of those teams, like what a beautiful organizational future that would be. Like I think people could move mountains, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's two goals that every leader should aspire to. One, you're at your boldest and your most dangerous. to the status quo when your rare breed traits and your rare breed mindset are front and center. That's when you inspire your people and you in your team and your organization to come up with the most game-changing business ideas. Number two, if you don't consider yourself a rare breed or you don't think that you have the capability to do it, that you probably have these people in your organization and they're an untapped resource, it's your job to find them and develop them. You know, look for those difficult, restless spirits that we described earlier. Encourage them to be who they are in full color, you know, nothing held back, nothing in black and white, right? Cultivate those mavericks, you know, cultivate those geniuses that everyone else is dismissing. That's what great leaders do. And they see what no one else can. And that's what I'm finding when we go in and share this thinking, that it really does change the course these businesses are on, because it changes the actual chemical makeup of who the spirit is there, but it's more codified in some way. It's almost like they've been forged in the fire because you lit it on fire when you came in. So in some ways, what I liken it to is that we go in and we sort of set everything on fire. And what it does is bring them together, because you're trying to tear it down. And what they do is get forged in the fire. And then they sort of lean into one another and sort of work shoulder to shoulder. And at Motto, we have a saying like, know what flag you're trying to carry and what hill you're marching towards. That's why we named the company Motto to begin with. It's a war cry. And so we help these organizations kind of solidify around a big idea, but then we help them think with this rare breed mindset so that they can change the way that they build their organizations and brand their organizations, and also leverage the talent within it. So you find that when you kind of set things on fire, you push people back together, and you also get them to acknowledge how they work in teams. So you made a really good point, which is, and why the quiz is so helpful, is that a lot of times what breaks down teams is lack of who the other person is across the table. They may be in the same room and you may put them at the table together, but they don't know how to work together. So for example, if you're weird and I'm audacious, we might kind of see eye to eye. But if I'm audacious and you're emotional, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be oftentimes the loudest person in the room. And to an emotional person, they don't quite understand the way that we are, because they don't move through the world the same way that we do. And what we found is if you kind of understand the makeup of the team, of if you know that you've got, you know, 4 people who are hypnotic, 2 people who are obsessed, 3 people who are rebellious, and you actually understand who that person is across the table, it gives you another way to establish understanding of the other person. And it helps to make more innovative ideas, because it's not about being competitive or trying to say you're wrong and I'm right. It's about how do we work together to create the most impactful output that we possibly can by recognizing our differences. And rather than being affected by them or challenged by them or even jealous of them or even, you know, sort of turned off by them, how do we respect that in the other person? And I think that's what Rare Breed does, is it gives you a way to identify the other person across the table and actually work with them in powerful ways.
And I think as well, I've just wrote a couple of questions down as I was listening to you, which you answered like almost immediately. So that was great. But I want to suggest as well that they, if a few leaders, a few of my clients and network and stuff listen to this, right? And they obviously have worked with me or hired me at some point, and even fired me for being weird, I imagine. Just oh, like gosh. You said in the
we
book.
We say that too. We've been fired for the same reasons we were hired.
Yeah. So he looks
that's
great.
A rare breed. That's a rare breed move all day long.
Okay, yeah. We've had enough of that one. We should.
Yeah. Enough of you. Yeah.
But it's seeing... After this conversation, actually, it's made me realize that if leaders have the awareness to recognize rare breeds in their organization, right, in their teams, or anybody really, doesn't have to be leaders, right? People you mm-hmm. work with, colleagues, mm-hmm. right? If you have rebirths in the team, not to dismiss those like you've got in the book, you've got a positive and negative definition,
right?
One of a nicer phrase of each of the virtues at the beginning of the chapter. But to see their perspectives, their worldviews as valuable and understand how to use them for the benefit of the wider good. You know, it's I think that's one of the biggest takeaways people can use this, is using the book, using these virtues, using this test to get another depth of understanding of what their team's capable of, maybe.
It's like the new Myers-Briggs. I mean, it's a new modern version of seeing the other person across the table for all of who they are and being able to communicate with them and understanding what makes them tick and not being challenged by them. You know, oftentimes in teams and groups, we're, you know, if we're an A-type personality, we're trying to sort of prove ourselves. You know, we're always out to outdo, outperform. We're just an A-type personality. We're always on high. And for a lot of people, like, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, there's a lot of rebels that I've met in my work and career that are the quietest person in the room. You know, we talk about this in the book, but Rosa Parks didn't jump on the seat and bang her fist. She just refused to move. That's a very rebellious act, and rebellion can be quiet. Emotional doesn't have to mean, you know, instability. Obsession doesn't have to mean paralyzation or the point that it's never good enough and nothing will ever get done. It can mean so many powerful things to be utilized. And if you know what makes people tick, if you know what really turns them on in terms of their work and their life and their passions, you can harness them in remarkable ways. And that's what we hope Rare Breed does. You know, we wrote it as a clarion call for all of the people who had ever been told that they didn't fit in, that they were a square peg in a round hole. You know, if you think about all the terms that are used to describe people that are different, we use the word misfit or outlier, or, you know, they're negative, you know, like there's something about you that's flawed. And I wanted to come up when Ashley and I were writing this, and there's a really funny story about how Rare Breed even became the title of the book, which we could unpack if you wanted to, but it was a phrase that my dad gave us in 2007 when we were at a very low point in our career where we were thinking about quitting, wanted to give up, and just feeling extremely misunderstood. Like we had bitten off more than we could chew. And we were not cut out for this game of entrepreneurship. And what did we think we were doing by dropping out of college and just shy of our degrees? You know, what audacity did we have to be able to do that? And feeling like we couldn't do it. And my dad said, you know, being entrepreneurial himself and coming from a much, much dicier situation, he was a coal miner's son who grew up extremely poor and started his own company with much less than even we did. I think we started with like $250. I think my dad started with nothing. And he grew it to a successful business without any formal education. And so we admired him. You know, he came from the school of hard knocks. So his common sense approach was always something that I really admired. And I was just so loyal to him in terms of how he saw the world. And I remember him telling us, like, well, you two are a rare breed. Like, not everybody's going to understand you. Not everybody's going to get you. Some people are even going to hate you, but, you know, succeed because of who you are, not despite who you are. And I remember that conversation was extremely game-changing for us on every sense of the word, viscerally, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It was like the person who gave you the advice at the time you needed it the most. And I remember Ashley and I stuck that phrase in the back of our mind and continued operating as motto for 15 years without ever really thinking about writing a book, you know. And finally, after we had experienced all of that and actually came out, you know, had the experience to come out and say something about this, you know, we wrote about it in 2019. Like we took that phrase from 2007 and made it into the book that it is. And what I think it's really powerful about Rare Breed is it's truly a badge of honor. When you think of words like outlier and misfit, it means like you're kind of the ugly fruit. You know, you're the thing that just people don't really quite understand. But when you call someone a rare breed, it's such a compliment to who they are. it's a it's recognizing the true individuality and the real one of a kindness that is hard to find another phrase that I can think of that really represents what it means to be an original.
Yeah. I think absolutely. Like you could wear it as I'm a very visual guy and I'm picturing a big, you know, like those big birthday badges you get when you're four.
a big button, yeah? Yeah.
a big one of those, or like a weird sheriff's medal, like with your virtue.
You just put it on there. Yeah, I'm audacious as fuck, you know?
this is me, right? Just like
this is me.
That could serve as a warning sign to those, right? Who don't.
Watch out. Yeah, that's what people say about me when I'm so obsessed, right? Like I'm such a details person, and I'm one of those people who have a rare ability to be very macro and very big and kind of visionary and also extremely detail oriented. So I'm like really a double threat to people that work with me, and I do drive people mad to be totally frank. I remember when we were shooting Rare Breed, I think I moved the cameras about 1500 times. Like, it's just like, lighting's not right. You know, lighting's not right. Like I was just, and they were all just like, this is what they do for a living. And I'm like behind the camera being like, this is not right. It's not the right look. And I was driving them all mad, but you know, they hung in there with me. And I think it became something, you know, truly, truly cool. But yeah, sometimes you really got to fight hard for your vision.
You have. And I think that is a beautiful place to end it, actually. That comes to a good point of the first part of this conversation. So to let you let you know into a secret, when I told my co-host, Steve, of the other part of the podcast that we were going to have this conversation, A, he was super jealous because it's out of his season part. And B, what we're doing in the...
Sorry, Steve.
is I bought him the book as a penance.
Thank you.
Questions, which is winging his way onto him at the moment. But what we're going to do for the next season is book the trend a little bit of other podcasts and just have the same kind of guest that we learn the most of, mm-hmm. and go deeper into the topics that we discuss and
Love
deeper
that.
Into the topic of the stuff, because I don't, you know, I'm not competing on the amount of different people I can have on the podcast, but what the impact of what we learn is, right?
Yeah.
And I think it'd be super interesting to have yourself on, and even Ashley.
I'd love for her to join. Yeah, she couldn't today, but she's the two of us together is quite a dynamic duo. So I'd love to bring her on for sure. She's so, if you like me, you'll love her.
What rare breed is Ashley? Are you both the same? Just weird questions at the end.
So audacious is mine, and Ashley has, she's taken it, she was audacious and emotional, and we were talking about which we think. She's a little bit of both. I would say she's more emotional. She's just such a sharp, you know, the way she feels and is able to size things up and read the room is just, I'm in awe of it all the time.
I agree with that. She asked very good questions. So on the YouTube channel, right, there was a couple of questions that made me go, oh,
yeah,
that was a big question. Where did that come from?
Like, do you enjoy polarizing people? I was like, oh, I remember being in that moment and be like, wow. And she's just so, so genius. I mean, I'm audacious in that I help us try to do things that sort of seem impossible. But she is just the genius behind so many of the strategic work that we do. And you really see that come out in the show and her questions and just the way she thinks and the things that she asks. She's unafraid to ask those tough questions. And I was just in awe. Like, I remember sitting back and be like, normally I'm the talkative one, but I was just watching her at work and just couldn't believe how talented she was at that, you know? And it was the first time we'd ever done anything. I mean, we'd never been on a show of that caliber, sitting across from people of that caliber. And, you know, it was to see her just completely plug in that way was exciting. Cause it felt like we were asking questions that you wouldn't normally get asked, you know, and having a different conversation than you would normally have. yeah. about these topics. So that part of the show I really love.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant show. I'm going to put all the links to everything we've discussed.
Thank you. Thank you.
In the show notes. And
well, it's truly been an honor. Thank you so much for all the amazing things that you said about Rare Breed and just for bringing me on and letting me talk about it and just for sharing the like-mindedness. It's from one rare breed to another. I love that I've gotten to know you and that we've been able to have this conversation. It's one of my favorites.
Good. Thank you. It was exciting as a fan. More of anything to
thank you
to have and pick your brain about stuff and
yeah
tell you how it's impacted me. I think is important because if it impacts people like me, it impacts a ton of others. So
tell everybody you know, because I want more people to read it. I think it can, you know, not because we wrote it and we're proud of it, but because I really do think that it changes the way people think, you know, and in a positive way. And I just want more people to get their hands on it, just to more so to empower others, you know, to fully hear their voice and really lean into it in a positive way. It matters, you know. We need more people who believe in themselves, you know, and can fully live into that. It's when you meet somebody that you feel like is really kind of keyed into that, it feels different, you know. You feel the difference in who they are.
Yeah, I agree totally. So we end off with how people can best get hold of you and find out more about the Rare Breed book and you and Ashley and Motto and all that stuff.
Absolutely. So you can find all about us at wearemotto.com. We're on social at wearemotto. And if you really want to get your hands on the book, we're on Amazon. You can buy it at Target, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, anywhere books are sold, really, Kindle, Audible. And you can also, if you want to go deep into the quiz, you can take rarebreedquiz.com, which we were talking about briefly in the show. And then if you want to watch the YouTube series, you can go to youtube.com/rarebreedtv.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. That was a really good conversation.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh man, this is like, I didn't want it to end. It's so good. You know, I don't often get to explore it in this way. So it's super cool. I mean, I was just loving every minute of it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Well, yeah. People, that was Rebite number 12 with Sonny Bonnell. We will be speaking Rare Breed again on this podcast. But for now, I'll see you later.